But what we're going to talk about this afternoon is about the Lord's table. And we're going to read some verses from the 10th chapter of 1 Corinthians. And moreover, brethren, I would not that you should be ignorant how that all our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea, and were all baptized unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and did all eat the same spiritual meat, and did all drink the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with many of them God was not well pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. Now these things were our examples, to the intent we should not lust after evil things, as they also lusted. Neither be idolaters, as were some of them, as it is written, that people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Neither let us commit fornication, as some of them committed, and fell in one day 23,000. Neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted, and were destroyed of serpents. Neither murmur ye, as some of them also murmured, and were destroyed of the destroyer. Now all these things happen unto them for examples, and they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. Wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. Now that will be the principle thought that we'll consider. I think all of us realize from this that there is a solemn warning in that last statement of Paul that I have read. Wherefore let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. And Paul tells us that all these things were and samples for us, both in the 6th and 11th verse, he tells us so, and then he goes on to say, wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. The apostle enumerates some of the things they did that displeased God, and which kept them out of the promised land. He says that they lusted after evil things. They worshipped idols. They committed fornication. They tempted God, and they murmured against God, not satisfied with God's providential care for them. These are some of the things that he lists here, which in the ultimate sense led to that they died in the wilderness, all those that were 20 years and older. And these words of warning is something that we should take to heart, because it was not written only for the church at Corinth, but in the first chapter, the first verse, Paul says that this letter is sent to all that in every place call upon the name of Jesus Christ. And since all of us call upon the name of the Lord here in LaSalle, why, it's also for us. Now before we talk about what we call the Lord's table, I want to talk a little bit first about the Lord's cup, because the Lord's cup and the Lord's table is closely related one to another. And so while it is another picture in a certain sense, yet it is so related to the table that we want to take that up first, I believe. The Lord has promised his people That is, those that are thoroughly consecrated and spirit begotten, trying to walk in the Master's footsteps, that they shall have the privilege of drinking of the Lord's cup. And we know that this means that we shall drink of the cup of suffering, and we're also going to drink of the cup of joy. While some friends feel that the cup of joy is only after we have passed beyond the veil that we have the cup of joy, but I don't share that opinion. I believe that we often drink of the Lord's cup of joy on this side too. In our association together, we certainly are joyful and happy, and our experiences are such that we rejoice in them. In the conventions like this, we rejoice in our fellowship together, and they can't say that they're drinking the cup of suffering on an occasion like this. You also remember that our Lord on one occasion said that the Father poured the cup for him. He said, "Shall I not drink the cup which my Father had poured for me?" And the same cup is given to us to drink. The Father is pouring the cup for us. And so shall we not drink of that cup that he has poured for us. But at the same time, let us remember that it is the Father that pours the cup, that it is not Brother John or Brother Paul or someone else. We are apt to blame someone else for giving us a cup to drink that isn't to our taste, something we would rather pass up. And so we blame some of the brethren for that. But when we have something to drink out of a cup of joy and happiness, well, then we have to give the thanks to the Lord. But when it's something that we don't like, then we blame the brethren for it more often than not. And that is what we will have to watch out for, that when you have to drink of a cup of suffering, that remember that the Father poured it and not the brethren. The brethren may have been the instrument in the Lord's hand to do it, but it's the Father that pours it. If we drink of that cup faithfully, even unto death, then of course we will eventually have a place in the kingdom, and then drink it anew with the Lord, the new wine with him in the kingdom. And if we thus drink of the cup, we're truly happy, though we continually share in the reproaches that fell upon the Lord, that will also to some extent fall upon us. Now there is another cup also, and that is the devil's cup. And while the cup that we drink, a cup of sacrifice that the Lord has poured for us, we believe also that the devil's cup is a cup of sacrifice. Now, I suppose someone say, either you don't know what you're talking about, or else you forgot what you said before, because the Lord's cup is not the cup of sacrifice. But maybe you'll see it that way when I tell you a little bit more about it. It is a tendency, of course, for us to believe that the world of mankind, or the man in the world that drinks of the Lord's cup, that is, he's enjoying all the wonderful things in the world, that he doesn't sacrifice anything. He, instead of that, he is getting all the good things in life, as they say, and enjoy all that that the flesh enjoys. And that's true, but at the same time, it is nevertheless a sacrifice. Because these people sacrificed many things that they perhaps don't think of as a sacrifice, but nevertheless it is a sacrifice. They sacrifice true happiness in this life, for one thing. They have no real happiness. They could have it, but they don't want it. They sacrifice that part of it. And they also sacrifice opportunities for developing a character in this life that would be of a great help to them as they start on the highway of holiness in the next age. If they would do differently, they could perhaps build a character that would be a help to them when they start on that highway. But because of taking the other road, they develop a character that will be a hindrance to them to start with, at least. And the surface of the devil's cup sparkles with hopes of earthly prosperity, pride, and self-exaltation. And to gain this, they sacrifice time, talent, and influence to get it, and in the end, gain nothing but disappointment. All this should teach us that we cannot drink of the two cups at the same time. They'll either have to choose the Lord's cup and drink of that, or else choose the devil's cup and drink of that. We have to choose between the two. In other words, we cannot partake of the Lord's Spirit and at the same time partake of the world's spirit. The worldly spirit is selfishness, pride, ambition. The Lord's Spirit, on the other hand, is unselfishness, humility, and self-denial. And the two spirits are absolutely antagonistic to one another. So, it is a case of choosing which one we prefer. And since the apostle's warning is addressed to the church, to those that are already drinking of the Lord's cup, it implies the possibility of losing our appreciation and our share in the Lord's cup. It implies that we might turn back again to the beggarly elements of the world, the devil's cup, instead of the Lord's cup. And therefore, let us search ourselves carefully to see if we are really earnest in carrying out our consecration, if we are really earnest in drinking of the Lord's cup, both that which is a sacrifice, a suffering, and that which is joy. Now we come to the Lord's table, and the same rules hold good in connection with the Lord's table. There are two tables set before us, the Lord's table and the devil's table, just like we had the Lord's cup and the devil's cup. And we cannot eat of two tables at the same time. You either have to put your feet under the Lord's table, or else put your feet under the devil's table. The Lord first prepared a table for his church at the beginning of the gospel age, and that table has always, ever since, been supplied with the food in due season. Ever since. And some of the Lord's people have been appointed to serve at these tables, at the Lord's table, just like you appointed someone to serve at the table at noon. So the Lord arranged that some should be appointed from amongst the Lord's people to serve at the table. Not that they should supply the food and cook it, but only that they should dispense the food, that they should serve it to the others at the table. That all of these that are appointed to this work have to do. The first servants that the Lord appointed were the apostles. Later on, other servants served the meat in due season. All during the gospel age, we've had some that served meat in due season. While there were a few during the dark ages, there were some. But now at the end of the age, in the harvest period, the Lord himself is present again, and the Lord himself has set the table and appointed the servant to bring the food out of the storehouse, and other servants that take the food and pass it on to others. And this table that the Lord has presented before us is fairly groaning under all the good things piled on it. And a wonderful steward, a wonderful servant, was set over the storehouse from which it comes. That one you know just as well as I know this, our dear brother Russell. It hurts me often on my journeys when I come in contact with these that claim that they are on a level with Brother Russell bringing out food. They say that Brother Russell was not that servant, he was just a servant. And we also, they say, are servants, and so they're just equal. Brother Russell's word hasn't got any more effect than this one's word. I heard about one place where some of the Lord's people had been a short time ago in a little class, a one-day convention, where I think they had something like five or six different kinds of thought respecting the truth presented to them from the platform. And they were all these different ones were agreed that Brother Russell was not that servant, but a servant, because they feel themselves on a par with him in dispensing food to the household of faith. Now the devil's table was also set up in the early part of the gospel age. And the devil's table is getting worse and worse every day in every way, as Brother says. Every day in every way it's getting worse. It's getting more filthy right along. And every day in every way there are more of them that are ready to serve it to you. The devil started off with his table, as I said, early in the age. And as time went on, he enlarged it with various additions and different foods, all the denominational tables and foods to go along with it. All just as bad as was already on the table before. And during the Gospel Age, especially the Dark Ages, the saints of the Lord had to put up with this table. They had no special table during those Dark Ages that were spread with the pure doctrine, the pure truth. They had to sit together with these others during those Dark Ages and partake of the food on the table and do the best they could to take that which was good, that they knew was good, and leave the rest alone. That's the best they could do in that time. But at the end of this age, the Lord says, "Come out of her, my people." He said, "Come out, I have a table prepared for you here. Here is where you have pure, good food. Come over and enjoy yourself here." And he shows them his table, and they can see how it's filled with all kinds of wonderful food. And the best part of it is that it's filled with meat in due season, with food that is proper for harvest work. If you have been out in the prairies, in North Dakota, South Dakota, you ought to know something about it. I spent several seasons out there in the harvest time. And they have these harvest crews and the threshing machines. I come around from one farm to another, and they hired men to go out in the field and pitch the bundles up on the hay racks and haul it into the threshing machine. And they put up tents where they fed the men. And bless your heart, if they didn't give them good food, the men didn't stay very long. They just pulled up and said, "Give me my money. I'm going somewhere else where I get better food." They had to furnish food as a bit for a harvest worker. Good, solid food that would give them the stamina they needed to work from sun up to sun down. You see. And this is what the Lord has provided for his people today in the harvest period. He's given us harvest food that is strong enough that we can do valiant work in the harvest field. So if we have gotten our feet under the Lord's table, let us thank the Lord that we've been so fortunate to have been invited to sit at his table, and let us stay there too. He has provided this table, as we're told, in the midst of our enemies. Right in the midst of our enemies. And our enemies on every side would like to come in and upset it. There it is, and they can't do a thing about it. Now for a time, we might consider some rules of good manners while we are at the table. You know, if you sit at the banquet table or at the, you're a guest of someone and quite a few people there, sometimes there are certain rules, regulations that we are supposed to comply with. And we're going to consider some rules now that deals with the Lord's table. And let us, while we do this, remember that the Lord is the real host. He is the one that has invited us and given us our seat at the table. And let us then remember that It's up to us to conduct ourselves in such a way that it would at least indicate appreciation of the privilege of being a guest of the host table. One of the first rules is that we should be eager for a good appetite. When we are invited out for a meal, it wouldn't be very nice, would it, to go over to a snack bar and get yourself a couple of hamburgers and some coffee and just to kind of fill up a little and figure out, well, I better prepare. I don't know just what I'm going to get. I don't want to get too hungry. Maybe I won't get anything I like, so I'll fix up a little bit beforehand. We were invited out to a place last evening, wife and I, and I can readily understand that if we had come there with our stomachs fairly full already and couldn't eat much, the host would have said, what's the matter? Don't you like what they have? Or if they didn't say it, they would at least thought so, that we didn't like the food that was presented. So one of the things we should do is to try to work up a good appetite for the Lord's table. You remember that at the Passover, when the children of Israel, they had to eat bitter herbs in connection with the Passover lamb to sharpen the appetite. And that's why sometimes that we have these appetizers, you know, to start the meal with, so you kind of sharpen up your appetite a little bit, and you'll eat so much more. So, we believe that those bitter herbs that the Israelites partook of might be a good picture of bitter experiences that we have that sharpen our appetite for the Lord's truth, His table, the food on the table. So, if you ask the Lord to help you appreciate the Lord's truth, and I think most of us, every now and then, offer this prayer that the Lord would like to have you help us to appreciate the truth more and more. Don't then feel bad if you get some experiences that really is trying and difficult to go through, because the Lord is just helping you out to give you some good appetite for His truth, you see. You can expect to have some trials and difficulties if you ask the Lord to help you to appreciate the truth, because that's one way of doing it which seems to work the best. So we should accept all of these things in the right spirit when they come, knowing that it's for our good. And another rule is we should be thankful for the food. We should return thanks. Now, sometimes we ask the Lord's blessing upon the food, the temporal food, and we appreciate that part of it. It's fine. But when it comes to the spiritual food, when you've had the wonderful feast and you feel so at the end of the day that you've just simply been enjoying all the talks and all the wonderful things said and the fellowship and everything, and you've been sitting at the Lord's table for a whole day and just had a wonderful time, it'd be nice to thank the Lord for the wonderful time you had and that I had when we get ready to go to bed, or we have a little a time when we go by ourselves and just talk to the Lord about how much we enjoyed it, how wonderful it was, to thank Him for what He did for us that day. That's one rule that we should try to observe. In connection with this, relate how we were brought up in the old country where I come from. When we were guests at someone's house and our parents were there, even if they weren't there, we had to learn from, we were little tots and all the way up, that when we had something to eat or a good drink of some kind, milk or something, that we should always thank the host for it. And after meals, the children always went round and shook hands with the host and hostess and thanked them for the food. And the grown-ups would get up from the table and bow their heads and thank you for the wonderful food. I think it's a good custom. It promotes goodwill and good fellowship, and it shows that we appreciate what has been done for us. And I think we should do the same thing to the Lord because of the good food that He has provided for us. Then another rule is that we shouldn't bolt our food. That is, don't gulp it down. Just like you see a hog do it sometimes. And he just, whoop, whoop, he just goes down. All he can get through it as fast as possible. That is not the way we should do. In the first place, if we gulp our food down, the temporal food that we eat, it isn't good for our digestion. To get the best out of our food, we should chew it thoroughly. All doctors, dietitians will tell you this, that you should chew the food thoroughly before you swallow it. How many of us do it? Most of us, if you're hungry, you get it out as fast as you can. But that's the right way to do it. Because by chewing the food good, it breaks it up into small particles. And then these small particles, being chewed on and turned over, mixes with saliva. And then when you swallow it, it helps the digestive organs to properly digest that food and extract from it all the good that the body should have from that kind of food. So when we feasting at the Lord's table, maybe at the convention or at the good study meeting or one of our regular services when you hear a good talk or something like that, don't just gulp it down. That is wonderful. You just simply grab it right away, what the speaker is saying or what is brought out in the study meeting and so on. But take it calmly and try to remember it, and then when you get home, you can begin to chew it, see? You can begin to turn it over in your mind and thoroughly masticate it, and the saliva could be supplied by supporting scriptures from the Bible on the very point that you're turning over and chewing on. You'll get it thoroughly chopped up, and then the first thing you know, why, you begin to feel good because you see something, you learn something, and it is impressed on your mind, and so it starts to digest properly by your spiritual organs. Another lesson at the Lord's table is, eat your food with joy. Now, many of us have gone to a table to eat natural, temporal food, And if we've been sorrowful, down in the dumps, didn't feel happy at all, just everything was wrong, how good have you, much good have you gotten out of the meal yet? Sometimes you don't feel like eat anything. You just nibble at it and say, well, why don't you eat something? Well, I'm not hungry. I don't have no appetite. Because the physical condition is not right. See? On the other hand, if you're joyful and happy, everything seems to look good and everything seems to taste good, and you definitely enjoy it. See? And so, the Lord's people, we should be sober and thoughtful when we feast at the Lord's table in a special sense. But we should also be full of joy and happiness in the realization of the wonderful food we get and the Lord's goodness to us. If you if we go around with a long face when we are in a study meeting or we are in a convention or something, the friends will wonder, what's wrong with Brother Copeland? He doesn't look like he's enjoying himself at all, like he's getting anything good out of the talk. So let us try to be joyful and happy, and then we'll have so much a better result from the Lord's table. And another thing is to wait on each other at the table. As we sat at the table in there, maybe you and I and others had to say, please pass the butter, please pass the meat, or I need some more potatoes, please pass it. Well, have you ever been at a table where possibly 10, 12, or 14 people sitting at the large dining room table, and you're eating, and there's someone next to you that is so intent upon eating what's on his plate that he doesn't see this side or that side. He just, so when you get something that's being passed, they say, here, do you want some of this? Oh yes, all right. And he takes some and then passes it on. But he is just so engrossed in what he can put into his stomach that he hasn't got time to watch and see what's coming around, being passed around, and is not alert to help to pass the food to others that may be sitting over here waiting for that dish to come down there so they can get some too. So at the Lord's table, we sometimes have some dear friends that are so busy absorbing the truth themselves through the books, through the back towers, the reprints, that they have no time to pass the food on to others that may be waiting for that very thing they have. They can't take time out to pass the truth along to anybody else. All they want to do is to stick at home and read their towers and read their books, and that's all they're interested in. That's not good table manners. They should pass the food on to others that is waiting for it, that would like to get it, but don't know how to get it. Sometimes we find friends that have plenty of time, or they have plenty of money, or other talents, and they're so busy studying and reading for themselves that none of these things are being used to pass the spiritual food on to others. You see that, so to speak, sitting at the same table. And then another thing we have to remember in connection with this food, we don't say to our neighbor, when the plate of beef comes down to us, we take some of that and we say, here, neighbor, have some of my beef. You don't want us, you don't say that. We don't want to, we got the truth, don't let us try to pass that truth on to others as something that we have prepared, something that we had gotten up, and that's the wonderful stuff. Let us tell them that this is the Lord's table. It's food at the Lord's table, and it's the best that you can get, nothing better than this. But it's not ours. We don't take any credit for it. It's the Lord that provides it. Some of the friends find new thoughts as they read and study, and they let you know that they discovered this, and it's just wonderful. They didn't get it from the reprints or the volumes. No, they found it by themselves. Or they knew about it long before they saw the volumes of the reprints. You know, it reminds me of, said here this morning about sandwich in the pocket. It reminds me of that if you were sitting at a nice table full of all kinds of good food, and then there were several people around there, you know, with something over their neck and a board in front of them and all kinds of sandwiches out, and they come around and offer you some sandwiches. Then you had the whole table full of nice food. It'd be foolish, wouldn't it, to say, well, I'll sample some of your sandwiches and let all the good food go. But some other friends do that. They're busy with the sandwich sign over them. Good sandwiches for sale. Good sandwiches, free. It's all something that Brother Russell prepared for us. But when you get to investigate it, it's rather like Brother Zeno says, baloney. So, let us be careful that we don't accept nor send forth any doctrine ourselves except that which the Lord has provided on his table. And don't forget that the Lord is feeding his people by his own steward. We were talking about this last night, about this place where they had so many different ideas, different brethren on the platform had different ideas. None of them agreed except one thing, and that was that Brother Russell wasn't that certain. I would like to tell those people that it's a shame that the Lord didn't take the manuscripts of the volumes before they were printed and submitted to these people to correct them where they were wrong. But the Lord didn't do that. The Lord found a faithful, wise steward that he knew he could trust, and he turned the work over to that steward to furnish the food that the Lord had brought out of the storehouse. And it's for us to be careful that we don't go somewhere else and partake of any food that's brought, any sandwich, no matter how good it looks. Maybe wrapped in silver paper for all we know, but it's not good on the inside. Then, I have only a couple of minutes left. Don't laugh at others' mistake at the table. You sit at the table and feast, temporal food, and somebody happens to spill the milk in pouring it, or they happen to spill a little gravy. When they don't laugh at them, make fun of them because they were a little clumsy. And the same thing with the Lord's people, new beginners and so on, are sitting with us at the Lord's table eating. They make mistakes. They don't understand all, and they answer wrong sometimes at the meetings. Don't let us laugh at them and say, oh well, they don't know anything. They're learning. We were that way ourselves to start with. So let us just be careful that we observe these manners the best we possibly can as we sit together at the Lord's table and there feed. And above everything else, as also said this morning, don't get up and leave the table, because if you do, there are 10 chances to 1 that somebody else will slip in and take your place once you left it. May the Lord add his blessing.